from Ho Ho Head Stuff Studios in Dublin. Welcome to Motherfuck Horror, a podcast about words, Irish, Irish words, words from Ireland, August Nullock. I'm Derek O'Shea.
I'm Patrick Kovanic.
And I'm Geraldine McAvoy.
And you're all very welcome to our seasonal end of year review Christmas spectacular.
Yay!
Tone it a spectacular though. Will it be spectacular?
You're setting the bar pretty high there.
It will be spectacular.
Mediocrely spectacular. Spectacular on a mediocre scale. Welcome.
So, 2018. On your bike. Away with you.
Get up the yard.
Do you know the five lamps?
I was at a wedding once, and my friend Pete was getting married, and he's from that area. He's from near the Five Lamps, and his best man was giving a speech, and he humorously dropped in that phrase, "Do you know the Five Lamps?" But Pete's brother had had a few vinos too many, and so he immediately answered. He shouted at the top of his voice, right next to the mother of the groom, "Just you're gonna hang his obelixes off them." It's like, oh God.
Yes, it's funny how people will complain about grammar, but then instinctively know the difference between yows, yes, yizzers, and yizzer.
It's innate, natural grammar.
Yes, but that's a Dublin thing, though, because
okay. So I'll translate. Yeah. You know the difference between and year.
Yeah,
like ye can sling ye your hooks, like
yeah. In fairness, since moving to Dublin, yizzer is a lot more useful. I find. You can sling user hooks. Like, that's great. I like that a lot.
That's like hands across the border. Like,
yeah, I love it. Yeah. You know, it's just connecting people. That's just what I aim to do.
Glasnost and perestroika between the Dubs and the Colchis.
Yeah. This is just all we need to do. We just need to swap a few words. We'll be grand then.
It's like a cultural exchange program.
You just take your yees and we'll take your ye and then we'll be done with it.
Hmm.
Absolutely. We can all learn from each other.
I'll be cold in the ground before I recognise ye.
Ye?
Ye. What's a ye? Yes.
The two ye or ye?
The two yes.
The two ye.
So
what I love about it is it's like the two yes, but if you want emphasis, it's the two yous.
Or if you're from Navan, the two yous.
The two yous. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but nobody's from Navan. No. Navan is an aggressively awful place.
I know. It's just... I think that, you know, there's no real difference in all the different towns in Meath. They're all pretty much the same.
They're all Navan. It's just a conspiracy.
No, that's completely unfair to the other towns of Meath, which don't get me wrong for a second, I also dislike, but they're not Navan.
No.
Navan is a special kind of hell.
I think we can all agree, though, Navan or Kells or Trim, they're not, you know, the other ones aren't Navan, may be the case, but they're also not Cavan. I think that's also important.
I raise this point of various towns and Meath because when we're looking back over 2018, we're looking at the best and worst things of the years. And one of my favourite things this year, one of the things that made me smile a lot was the Twitter account Jurassic Arse.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Elgarry, he'd kill you if he heard you compare Kells to Navan. Very, very upset with that comparison.
I saw a tweet from him actually being like, oh, Kells is lovely. And it was just a picture of a wall. Right?
So, Gary was one of our most popular curators of the Motherfucker Twitter accounts this year. He is, I believe he has some sort of role in education.
He is an educator.
He's an educator. So I asked him specifically to cover the much coveted back to school week slot in September. And he did flying. He passed in flying colours because the previous week had been the Rose Tralee week, which was covered by Brianna Parkins.
Yeah, which is tough act to follow.
That's a high bar. Like, that's a pretty high bar. That account's been brilliant as a curation rotation account throughout the year. Like, there've been some real big highlights in the year. Obviously, me.
Top Patrick, if I ever must. I'll never forget those iconic tweets. The number 13, where is it?
Where is it? My mystery number 13. And of course, as it's Christmas week, ho, 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 you've picked a pretty special curator for Christmas week. I'm really enjoying it so far.
I have indeed. For Christmas week, I thought none other than Daddy Nanolog himself, Oscar Akira, the co-founder of Pop-Up Gaeltacht and the star of one of our most popular episodes this year. Yeah, no, gno.
Yeah.
And maybe. The owner of one of the nicest beards in Ireland, it has to be said.
And you're saying that to a room full of bearded men, and yet we can only agree with you.
You've got
to
agree. My other half is has a beard, and I was doing something with Oscar recently, and he was on like a video, so he's watching it. And he was like, yeah, you were great, but that guy with a beard, it's amazing. I was like, I know, right? It's even better in person.
Oscar's one of the only people who could be an extra in Vikings and have to modernize his wardrobe.
Oscar, my Gaeltacht husband, as our wives call us.
So those two lads certainly have been big parts of the highlights of this year, and certainly in terms of dipping into the social media. And this might be a nice time to review some of the other highlights. Have you had any social media or other, before we get into other music and politics and stuff like that?
Keep it light now.
Yeah, let me think now. Good. Ruthie Fizz has had a great year on Twitter. She's been amazing. She's kind of, it's been a tough year for a lot of people, and she's got lovely lists and just nice, good content. And been on
stuff.
The show, and just a lovely person.
She was super on the show. It was great fun.
Yeah. Has her own podcast as well. So I thought she's just putting some really nice stuff out into the world in, like, you know, an otherwise not great year for a lot of reasons. Yeah. She was a nice social media presence. It was nice to have that.
My social media highlight of the year is #clip Neil Sé Cacailleoir.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was big. Just when we speak about the Irish language and things like that, it was nice. And it was friend of the pod, Kieran EA, who did a spectacular podcast a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. And it was just brilliant. And she, she started this hashtag, Neil Sé CGL, Neil Sé Cacailleoir, or It's Not All Right, to kind of just point out the, more or less, the hypocrisy in society that, like, we're as a society, as a nation, we're like, we're totes woke. Like, we do not want to offend anyone. And yet when you try and speak your own language in your own land, it's like, oh, is that, what's that the Irish for? Like, you know, or could you not just put your name in English? Because it's just easier that way. Like, or,
but it's such a thing that is so relatable to so many Irish speakers, and yet nobody nearly talks about it. And it's so weird that, like, it happens to all of us, that you get, depending on the reaction. I mean, I'm doing some research on it right now, and some people have, like, really aggressive reactions to you literally just minding your own business speaking Irish. So it really was interesting to highlight that, and to kind of not just make it visible for ourselves as Irish speakers, but to make it visible to non-Irish speakers as well. They could see, like, yeah, like, if this did happen to somebody who was speaking, I don't know, Algerian or something, or Polish, or, I don't know, Albanian, like, it'd be really weird if I treated them that way. But yeah, it's okay to, not to say that people who speak other languages aren't inherently discriminated against. They are. But it's weird. There's a weird.
But we acknowledge that they are.
Yeah, exactly.
We acknowledge that they are. That's the,
I think
that's
it's harder
difference.
To acknowledge that Irish speakers are discriminated against. Or not just discriminated against, but just treated really weirdly.
And not always treated badly. Like, you know, if anybody's listening to this, but I always treat Irish speakers. Well, yeah, absolutely. Like, we can treat well, but just weirdly, like, why are you like, and it's things like, you know, if we just go for a little drink, somebody's going to hear us speaking Irish, and they're going to come over and tell us what a shit time they had in primary school. And
yeah.
I just,
or even like,
don't.
Like,
care.
I remember being in a pop-up Gaeltacht once, and I was just speaking to a friend I hadn't seen in ages, and we were outside the bar, and it was in a particularly, like, it was in near enough Temple Bar, so there was a few, like, tourists hanging around, and they came over and started recording our conversation, and I was like, bro, this is weird in any language, please stop. Like, you know, we were talking about repeal at the time, so I was like talking about, you know, abortions and menstruation and stuff, ask Gaeilge, and this guy was like recording, like, aren't they great, isn't that lovely. I was like, if only you knew what we were talking about.
It's, like, great. It's great to hear the old Irish. It's great to hear the old Irish spoken. No it is. I don't speak of myself. I wish I did. What's stopping you?
Barrel of bros need to get some chill.
Literally every taxi I get home from a pop-up girl, like, that's the taxi driver. He just came and went. He's just, yeah,
it's the same one.
I loved it. No, it was Peg though. Oh, Jimmy Peg.
Peg's had a great year, even though she's been dead for 60 years.
Yeah, she's had a resurgence.
Yeah, I saw a really nice illustration for Nose magazine for Peg's 60th anniversary of her death.
Illustration by Ciara Kenny.
Yeah. Oh my god, it was really good. Check out her work. But yeah, it was a great year for Peg. Every year is a great year for Peg. People just don't acknowledge it. Okay.
It's funny that she's one of a number of figures of fun from the past who are being rapidly reevaluated in a year when kind of when the center has not held. the centre, and she quote Mr. Yates, yeah, as not holding at all.
Hmm. We've been reevaluating half of them though, like
yeah.
Yates as a fuckboy.
It's yeah. it's funny.
Dev as a not a total bastard,
not,
perhaps.
Yeah, not that much of a bastard. Still a bastard at the end of it, but yeah, not that much. I was actually in, I went on yet again, my third time to go on the tour of Arsenic Tron. I'm bringing all of my friends there. But there's a portrait of Maud Gonne in one of the rooms. And the tour guide was like, oh, this is Maud Gonne, who, you know, is inherently connected in this romantic tale of W.B. Yeats. And I was like seething with rage. I was like, romantic? How dare?
She did write him though.
Yeah, but so what, Derek?
Once. And then he proposed to her daughter.
And then he wouldn't off. Like, we've all been there. Yeah.
Do you reckon if Yeats spoke Irish, he would have had a better chance?
Definitely.
No.
Maud. Enchantart.
No.
All right, okay. Enchantart Dinin.
No, we'd have to ask her 16 times first and then ask Enchantzer Dinin.
I'm not suggesting that Maud Gonne was in any way obligated to Yeats on account of writing him. That's not my implication at all. But sometimes it's presented as if, you know, she was... actually, no, you know what? Fuck it. You know, he's a prick.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, sorry. For a second there, I thought I had... I thought I was...
For a second there, the misogyny just... It came, but then you just pushed it right back down.
And I was... I wanted to say actually I was worried how it sounded, and I thought I don't want to defend what that just said. I don't think Yeats
is going to write in
the important thing.
Well, actually,
if you get any letters from Drumcliff Churchyard, Sligo,
you know what I mean. Yeats is also, weirdly enough, often someone people say, oh, I hated that school, the way it's taught English.
Yeah, I think the way English is taught needs a radical overhaul, but you know, at the end of the day, I just don't care about how much you do or do enjoy. I don't enjoy school. Isn't it awful?
Let's both be on News Talk again to talk about the same subject. Again. Yeah. Like a week apart.
So, now, speaking of which, this 2018 has been Bliana Gallagher. And it has brought us many bounties. One of which is that...
Has it?
One of which... is, and when I say bounties, I do mean small coconut filled standard chocolate bars.
Also known as the worst celebration.
Right. Well, we won't have an argument on this because it'll be me all over again. How dare you?
Well, one of the things that has happened in Bliana Gaeilge is we have had somebody has just cracked this nut that, you know, that there are some people out there, you know, who, you know, they were minding their own business, there's innocent children, and someone spoke Irish to them and their childhood was ruined. And, you know, can this be stopped? And this brave journalists have spoken against, you know, against a wall of, you know, silence. They have dared to come on the radio and say that they didn't like Irish. And it was very brave of them. It was inspirational, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're cultural terrorists.
You know...
That's it, isn't it?
Somebody has finally stood up to those people who teach and speak Irish, because some fella who, you know, his French is fluent from school, but he doesn't know what the French word for fluent is when you ask him. That guy.
Fluent.
It's been a poor year for discussion of the Irish language and Irish language related issues and the broader mainstream media. It's been a very poor year in that we have lots of people who in our circle have tried to defend and articulate beautifully in the face of, but then...
I'll be honest with you, right? I don't think it was a poor year in particular. I think Bliana Gaeilge leaves a lot to be desired for, because it's supposed to be a year where the government is promoting the Irish language and they've sort of let us down. They've let the whole country down on that issue. But there have been some highlights, and one of it has been basically the media, the mainstream media, the English language media, and in particular the reactionary contrarian elements of it. You know, not going to mention any particular radio stations, but it rhymes with booze talk. Mm-hmm. Just basically giving themselves enough rope to hang themselves. And it's just, and eventually... people just got so sick of listening to gobshites talk about their shit time in school 40 years ago. And, you know, and yes, yeah, so people have gone on to talk about the Irish language, and Blanna Ní Chuffey did a wonderful documentary this year, and she fought the good fight on many occasions. Gardaín's been on the radio defending the Irish language. I've been on the radio defending the Irish language. We've, you know, we got a lot of positive feedback about this podcast and how we changed the, you know, for some people, not trying to big ourselves up too much, but how we literally saved the world.
We did, yeah, we've saved the language. It's safe now. Yeah, UNESCO, take away that endangered status. We've saved it. You're welcome, guys.
No, just how it's for some people changed the narrative around the Irish language and has made it something that they can connect with and feel better about. And the fact of the matter is, when all you can get to oppose it on the other side is Ivan Yates and Niall Boylan, you've won.
But I think, like you're saying, Derek, that it's a bad year for people discussing Irish and debating Irish on like the radio and in columns. It's been a fucking bad year for debating anything. Yeah. Because I genuinely have turned down a few things to debate. I turned down a few college debates and turned down one or two like radio debates because about other things, not about Irish, because I'm not going to sit across from somebody who I'm stating fact and you're stating what you read off of some weird website that you found that's not peer reviewed. And like, it's a waste of my time. So, I mean, I was reading recently about something about debate being dead, and I genuinely, like, I enjoy debating in university, but like, there's a lot to be, like, not a lot is gained from I say something and you say the exact opposite and then a load of people text in telling us we're Nazis, telling both people are Nazis for various reasons. You know, I think it's not specific to Irish, and there is a niche for that, and some radio stations and organisations have, you know, tapped into that niche, and that's fine if that's what you want to do, but I'm done with it now.
Yeah, it has been a kind of a bad year for public discourse in that regard, and like, you know, as the, you know, we're going to have the texts and the tweets coming in like, how dare you say it's been a bad year for public discourse? I demand you debate me.
I just want to debate, guys. Get out.
But like, one of the problems is like, when you sit down with someone completely and totally unreasonable, and I don't believe you shouldn't talk to people. You should always try and talk to people and try and win them over and try and win them over graciously to your side and all that. But when someone believes that, like, you hold up a piece of paper and it's blue and they say that piece of paper is green, and you can't debate that in public, and you can't debate that on the airwaves. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of sit down with them and go, yo, bud, what's going on, man? Like, why you feel this way?
Yeah. What's going on behind you that you think this piece of paper is green? Yeah. Let me chill out a little bit, you know? But, they don't give you, that doesn't get ratings. So, you know.
And the problem is, if you do that in a room with 100 people, and if 99 of them think you won, that's fine, that's great, but you've also just created another person who's sitting there going, oh, maybe it's green, though.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean,
he had a few good points there.
I did think there was a bit of a shade of green off of when you looked in a certain light, you know. But
of course, we're not talking about pieces of blue paper being green. We are talking about some objectively horrible shit that people believe.
Yeah.
And you just talk to people. I don't believe in completely ignoring them and belittling them and mocking them. Yeah. Okay, I mock them a little. Hmm. But, you know, don't publicly debate someone who just doesn't have any facts, doesn't have any knowledge, doesn't have any... There's no point to it.
This is the thing, and then the fact that say, if... And I often think that you can tell sometimes what people take seriously, that if you had a football match and you had the commentators and where you'd normally have, where Bill O'Hurley would normally have been with Johnny Giles and Eamon Dunphy and Sunset, you know, we're not going to bring in Johnny Giles this week. We're going to bring in someone who hates soccer.
Eamon Dunphy.
We're going to bring in someone who hates soccer, doesn't know anything about it, hasn't really watched games, thinks the whole thing should be shut down.
And thinks that balls are imaginary. So let's bring him in now. But he also will be white and a man and straight. Let's not get crazy, guys.
We don't want to be radical.
and there are these bars to be set. My late father used to complain about this, and it wasn't nearly as bad in 2015. That was before the bad year 2016, like when my father passed away in 2015. But he used to refer to this years back. He said, they're having a cockfighting contest and they're calling it a seminar on poultry behaviour.
It's funny you mentioned football, because one of the things that did happen this year was the BBC started to integrate female pundits. And of course, people lost their shit. They brought on Eni Aluko, who's one of my favourite players. She played for Chelsea. She plays for Juventus now, but she's also a qualified barrister. This is one of the most intelligent women like that the BBC could find. Never mind the fact that she's an England international, she plays top-level football, she's won the FA Cup and the league and everything like that. And they brought her in to replace somebody who hadn't played professional football in 30 years. And they're going like, oh, she doesn't know anything. It's like, no, she literally knows everything. Like not just about, and not just about the football being played on the pitch, but like, oh, how can a woman talk about men's football? She hasn't played the game. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, you haven't played the game, you waste of time. Shut the f*** up, Derek.
And sometimes when you get a person who is actually who's played sport and is articulate, it's a wonderful thing, and you really, that's why some people who are good at it really stay at the top for a long time. And sorry, Gavin, you were about to say something.
No, I wasn't. Sorry. I just had a look at somebody who was about to say something, but I wasn't.
But yeah, that's, and
were you going to talk about women over me? Was that what we were going to? No, I'm kidding. Sorry, go on.
But yeah, I mean, and it's,
sorry.
Well, we're cowed now.
Yeah. No, I was going to say something about that actually. About the, sorry, what was the pundit's name?
Eni Aluko,
yeah. So she had to be, not only was she like the top of her field in a footballer, she also, like the top of her field professionally, she's a barrister as well, so she's really smart as well. Like,
it's always funny when you mention this, because one of the points of advice when I was starting my podcast was, it was about basically podcast chemistry, and a friend said, a good show, basically you need your Bill O'Hurley, you need your Johnny Giles, and you need your Eamon.
Oh yeah, we tried to assert these one time. Yeah. Who was who? I can't remember
that,
who was
this
who.
This was that. Obviously, I'm the Bill.
Obviously,
I'm Bill, and obviously, Garagine is Eamon.
Oh, that's.
Does that mean I'm Josie?
You're Josie.
Class. Class.
Oh, Josie. Man.
That's me happy. I'm made up now.
Like,
that's,
I'm
class.
So angry about it, but I don't know if I'm angry, then that just reinforces the point.
This is, but at the same time, though, I mean, that's the thing as well, as knowing stuff to a greater or lesser degree. There was a kind of an on stage chemistry. But Eamon Dunphy, though, was also part of the under Angus Fanning, the Sunday Independent from the 80s onward, brought in a lot of columnists who Angus Fanning hated Irish, hated republicanism, hated the cultural nationalism and those sorts of things. And he brought in a lot of columnists who he felt tore this down.
Connor Cruise O'Brien.
Cruiser, Hugh Leonard, and Eamon. And
I liked Hugh Leonard. I always liked Hugh Leonard. Hugh Leonard was as Westbridge as you can get, but he wasn't belligerent, and what he wrote was lovely. And I thought Da was one of my favourite books when I was a teenager. I thought it was lovely. But he did. He created the culture by which Barry Egan can exist, feeding off the energy of celebrities.
What is Barry Egan? I don't know who Barry Egan is.
Barry Egan is the celebrity columnist, the gossip columnist for the Sunday Independent.
Oh.
He will constantly talk about his good friend Nigella Lawson and his great pal, insert name here. But basically, he's what's wrong with Ireland.
I love those columns because they exist in a world complete, like it's a fantasy world. I love it.
I think it's a fantasy world for Barry as well, but like it makes it into the paper.
I'm really glad that we're definitely on track in this episode.
We completely aren't, but anyway.
I assume, because Garradine's like a legal expert, that none of this counts as defamation.
We're calling me a legal expert now. That's defamation. I can't confirm that at all.
Bliain na Gaeilge, one of the maybe unintended kind of Irish language talking points this year was a tweet from a certain American celebrity.
Oh my God, right. A certain worldwide celebrity, I think it needs to be said. So I lost my shit the day that RuPaul tweeted in Irish. I audibly gasped in my office and knocked something over so loud that the girl who sits beside me was like, "You okay?" And I was like, "I gotta go make a call." Because she's not from Ireland, and I know she doesn't watch Drag Race, so I needed to first explain the cultural phenomenon that is Drag Race.
You have no cultural touchstone here. I'm gonna have to explain
and
so
also,
much.
The significance of RuPaul tweeting Ask Gaeilge, I lost the run of myself.
And not just Ask Gaeilge, but how a Gaeilgeour would tweet Jay and Crack.
This
oh
is the thing.
My God.
I'm going to pull up, see if I can pull up the exact text now, just because, first of all, it did start with the words Jay and Crack, not good Jay.
The letter J. Like if you had a buddy from Tyrconnell, like if Anton Gogokolo was sending you a little message, it'd be
I can't
Jay
imagine
and Crack.
Anton, who is like a huge like Drag Race fan, how much of his shit that he lost.
I
rang my friend who like loves Drag Race, and like he doesn't speak Irish, but he knew the significance. I was like, oh my God, we lost, we lost.
So here is the actual tweet.
So it was a Winter and a Heron, Jay and Crack, Clushum Gwil, Machalin, Michelle Visage, a Din of Harkin at Got Talent IRL, Isler Gwil Shifsha, Nabanrianica, Deadly, August Mighty Freshen. Oh, yes. Ach, bar doiv an ober a chorisdach. No, is sashe all away a vegstiv. Yes! Oh my
egg
god.
Egg sashay all away.
That is now a word. It's in the dictionary. Like, O'Donnell, move over. RuPaul has created terminology. What RuPaul and says is law.
This is the thing, because and like as Anton Bjorgan is here would say that, you know, that loan words are a natural part of Gaelic life, and whereas
yeah, you just lash an all onto the end of it.
Yeah.
Or alge.
And he was saying when he was egg record oil, he used kind of the correct term, and people were like,
egg taffety.
And then whereas so to actually see this, it suggests a level of confidence. But before this, the big oh my god, look at that, was the Queen of England, Elizabeth the Second.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Her, she said, "Uchtron
agus a chorge." Yeah,
yeah. People. Like, people, but
Magalie's right beside us went, "Wow."
Yeah, and her face
that was audible.
Like,
it was on the same mic. Wow.
But like that was my reaction, but like multiplied by, you know, infinity, because
the real queen just checked in.
The real queen tweeted us, and at the time, so. The filming of Ireland's Got Talent takes place in the Helix, and I work in DCU in the building next to the Helix. So I spent my lunch times hanging out outside the stage door waiting to see Michelle Visage, so I could be like, if I breathe the same air as you, and you often breathe the same air as RuPaul, then if so facto, me and RuPaul are friends. Like, that was my logic. And then RuPaul tweeted, "Ask Gaeilge," and then I had to be sedated and carried home for a while. It's just the best thing ever.
My favorite thing about it, what gave me energy about the whole thing, was the people complaining. She obviously didn't write it herself. She got somebody to write it. It's like it doesn't matter. It's just like when Tato announced that they were going to do bilingual packaging. They said, we're going to put the flavour and the stuff on the packaging in Irish because we think it'd be cool and people would like to do that.
Yeah.
And I was happy. Loads of people were happy. Yeah. But I remember somebody saying to me, oh, it's just a gimmick. I was like, I know.
Yeah.
It's a gimmick. We get a gimmick. Somebody has looked at this small population of minority language speakers and said, you know what? We need a gimmick to get them interested.
Yeah. it's like when, so you know those things that you get your name on, you like a little name tag with like a little cup with your name on it. Like, yeah. So Irish language, people with Irish language names never get those. So no matter what it is, if it has my name on it, I don't care if it's a toilet roll holder, I am buying that. It was like that, you know, it was just for the, like, those people.
We need more garaging nameplates in the shop.
Just put my name on anything, I'll buy it.
Too many borts.
But like, it was like that. Like, there was people being like, Jay is not in the Irish language.
Oh.
Like, get out. It's RuPaul. She can say whatever she likes. Also, she probably did write it herself because that's the magic of RuPaul. So, effectively.
But I do think that being a drag queen gives you a certain attention to detail and a certain attitude to perfection and show personship.
If RuPaul spoke Irish, that is how RuPaul would speak Irish. Like, she would reinvent the language. I have no doubt about it. That's what we're missing. That's what we need. We just need to get RuPaul on board with all of that sass.
And meanwhile, on the other side of the Atlantic, straight icon Ed Sheeran writes an entire song, translates an entire song to Irish and gets no praise at all.
Yeah, but he does have a tattoo, Gaelic ink on his arm, and I will never forgive that line in that song.
Oh, yes.
Or that
what's it, what?
So there's that line in that song, Galway Girl, that was assaulting our ears for many a month this year.
Yeah, worst thing the Brits have ever done to us. Yeah,
the worst thing ever, like, bar nothing. And there's a line in it that this Irish girl who's playing a fiddle in an Irish band in the bar on Grafton Street.
I know the song.
Yes.
She played the fiddle in an Irish band and she fell in love with a black and tan.
That's what she did. And then she says something like, what's the Gaelic ink on your arm? Like, who's this Irish girl who's calling it Gaelic? Because I just want to talk.
Hey. As I was recently corrected by a friend of a friend on the internet, sometimes people up north of Dublin refer to Irish as Gaelic. And we need to respect differences and love everyone.
Who are these people? Excuse me?
I'm sorry. I should clarify here. When she said, what's that Gaelic ink on your arm? It was a tattoo of Jason Sherlock.
Yeah,
on the forearm.
Just a portrait of J.O. Yeah.
And around it with musical notes and the words, boom, boom, boom. Let me say J.O. J.O.
Oh. Yeah.
So that was the Gaelic ink on the arm. It's on Ed Sheeran's left arm.
Yeah, okay. Well, then I forgive her on that one. It's fine. Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, so in addition to that song, he also translated one of his most popular songs, a frequent feature as First Dance's Weddings, Thinking Out Loud to Exmina Vos Art, and it was on a album, a CD produced this year.
Yeah,
was that on the one that came out this year? Because Kjell Ochteg, the album that Conrad O'Gaelge
worked on and put it.
But anyway, this year, okay, the keynote piece, the most important song that was on it, was Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus.
It was so good. Yeah, he got into it. Owen McDermott sent an email or something. And he did a video about it. It was amazing.
They went to New York. Yeah, they gave him the phonetic translation.
And the guys were like so on board with it. Yeah. And like, Milana, I think it was
McStowcook, Brockcook, baby. That's
fair balls to Owen McDermott.
Yeah.
Like, he's been doing great work with that for so long. And I do think it was a year before with Ed Sheeran, and no one got excited about it.
I'm Connor Reid, and this is Words to That Effect, a literary podcast of the curious, the intriguing, and the unexplored. With in-depth research and expert guests, I answer the kind of questions you know you need the answers to. Like, what exactly is transhumanism, and why do some people think it'll make them immortal? Why are there so many crime novels with the word girl in the title? Who was H.P. Lovecraft, and why is the internet a little bit obsessed with him? Listen to Words to That Effect wherever you get your podcasts, or at WTTEpodcast.com. Season 3 is launching very soon.
Somebody informed me, I was talking to somebody about the Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus Oscoelga, and he was like, an American friend, he's like, yeah, so that wasn't a hit in America. I was like, what? Apparently it's just Ireland and certain parts of the UK where like Wheatus are huge and that song is incredible.
Oh my God, what?
I know, it's unreal.
But like the guy from American Pie and the girl from American Pie were in the video.
No, absolutely. Like it was a big budget thing, but it's
what?
Just, so let's put it this way. Maybe it was a hit at the time, but it doesn't have cultural resonance.
But it doesn't play at every wedding ever.
No, exactly. Whereas it comes on in, well, whatever, it comes on in Dicey's and the whole place starts singing it.
That one and Maniac 2000. Everybody's on the floor. Maniac. Oh, yes.
There are people drinking in Dicey's listening to that song who weren't born when it came out.
Yeah, I believe
Maniac
that.
Maniac 2000.
Yeah.
I remember Mark McKay was talking about, he did an interview on the anniversary of Maniac 2000, and he was talking about, it was a real rocky story. You know, everybody tried to stop him from doing this, from releasing this song. And he's like, no, but it's not even a proper cover. You're just shouting over someone else's song, and you're putting crowd noise in the background. He goes, no, this is exactly what Ireland needs at this moment in time, at this moment of internal reflection.
Kick-started the Celtic Tiger.
Funky, yeah.
Sorry, the crowd was just a noise. He wasn't like...
He said, this is a, you hear it in the club and you think the crowd are cheering.
Was it
a sexy lady. She had to get her fill.
I'm pretty sure it's Thrill. To get her thrill.
It's not Phil.
I don't know. We'll have to get Mark on the podcast.
Can we get Mark on? Yeah, because I just want to tell him how many times that I played that single. I was just a CD with that one song. And I remember, like, that's
no
all B-sides. You could get.
Like,
and like I just would just play it constantly. Like,
okay.
Do you remember B-sides? They're not a thing anymore now.
I remember because I mentioned B-side in a reference to when we were having a discussion, and Emer hadn't heard of one. Emer Duffy hadn't heard of one because she's,
a child of the digital era.
She's a child of the digital era. I guess that, like, she never had an LP in her house.
I remember B-sides of tapes.
Yeah, exactly. And like the thing is, even when CDs started to come out, you know, when singles came out on CDs, they were still called B-sides. It was the two tracks. Mm-hmm.
And
that
then
weren't going to be on the album that you got on a single.
They were usually shite. I mean, that's
usually,
B-side.
Because they weren't even going to make the album. Yeah.
Or it was like a dance remix.
But now it's ridiculous, right? The singles chart is gone mad because our good friend, Ed Sheeran. He like gets 9 out of the top 10 spots whenever he releases an album because you buy each track individually.
Or
on
you
Spotify.
Just play it on Spotify. Like,
this takes me on to the next thing. One of my 2018 highlights is my favorite podcast that isn't from the Headstuff Podcast Network. My favorite international podcast is called Hit Parade. It's presented by a man called Chris Malanfi, and it's a history of the pop charts. Basically, the economics and the business side behind actual the music business, as well as the cultural significance of various artists. One of which is he looks at the actual history, how the CD, how in the 90s there was a war declared on the singles. After Live Aid, the top 40 was no longer a scientific measure of what people actually liked anymore, because you had charity singles, you had event singles, things like that. And then when CDs came out, then the price difference between a single and an album wasn't big enough to justify people buying a single every week, which they used to do in the 70s.
I'm glad that you're a nerd in every aspect of your life. It's not just here. It's just so heartening that like you just have this like weird interest in it's so lovely. Like, Derek is the cutest person alive. He's just so sweet in his interests.
I'm afraid you lost me at a podcast that isn't on the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Yeah, well, I didn't know there were such a thing.
Head Stuff is a great show. I just want to say that this is every time a new episode of Hit Parade lands, I'm like, yay, new episode. There's this brilliant comparative study of Tom Petty and Prince. That was just brilliant.
Oh, wow.
And about the Petty Prince. They started they both got their first top 10 single in the first year, 1979.
How long are the episodes?
They're about an hour long.
Just beyond commuting. Yeah. I'll give it a bash.
And yeah, he talked about how they were at war with their labels for most of their careers. And then there's a brilliant comparative study of Elton John and George Michael, which is just really beautiful. And
they were good buds, weren't they?
They were indeed. And have you other podcasts you enjoy?
Yeah, so on a recommendation from Alan McGuire of Juvenalia and Ellen Tanham of Juvenalia, I started listening to The Adventure Zone, which is just beautiful. It is three brothers and their dad playing role-playing games. And that doesn't sound funny, but they're absolutely hilarious. They're brilliant. And yet, you just get so sucked into the story. Like, you're actually just listening to four nerds from West Virginia playing Dungeons & Dragons, but you get so invested in the characters, and you're like, oh my God! Oh, I really hope that his sister's okay. it's brilliant. I just want to go for pints with them. They're just the best lads.
Do you, Guardian, have a podcast highlight of the year?
I started listening to, belatedly, The Guilty Feminist this year, and I love it so much. I think it's so good. I started off with the Irish, they did a show in Ireland in October, and they had Lynn Moran, Tara Flynn, and Alison Spittleon, and they're just really good. I really enjoyed it. So I started commuting from Dublin, so I have a long drive in the car, so I have the old podcast on. And obviously ourselves.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Bjorn. That's my Irish podcast of the year. They've been superb. Sinead Ní Uachtaráin, Shuni Gwynn, friend of the pod, and Enya Ní Fhreislán, and it's just class. It's three women talking about every single aspect of life you could think of. The episodes are 25 to 30 minutes long, so it's like bite-sized, and they're just, just hilarious. There's one episode in particular, it's like, I just could not stop laughing. They were talking about like the fear, and it's like, jeez, I just couldn't do it. And like, it's one of the better things. If you want to improve your Gaeilge, it's wonderful to listen to. I'm going to be really offensive to them now and say 2.5 Conyunty, because Shun is from Leinster, but she speaks a bit of Munster Irish. Yeah. Sinead Ní Uachtaráin is a Kerry Gaeilgeor, and Enya's from Tyrconnell, Dunanall.
But users of Folklore.ie and Tanglin.ie might recognise Sinead.
They might recognise Sinead Ní Uachtaráin because she does about 2/3 of the Munster pronunciations. Yeah. So every now and again, I'll be listening to Bjo O'Regan and Sinead will say a word and I'll go, oh, I've heard that before.
It's her.
It's herself. But then I think when we do look back on 2018, it's probably one very large event, one large historical event in Ireland. And we don't want to, we try not to pat ourselves on the back too much.
What? We're still singing songs about Euro 88.
Okay, well, we caution ourselves against doing what we're going to do anyway.
No. We pat ourselves on the back a lot, but we do not like to sit in a room with someone who's patting themselves on the back. Yeah. We will cut down anyone who thinks they did well in life or in general anything.
Your flaws remind me of my own flaws, so I must punish you.
I punish you, yes. What is this hubris? You think you've achieved something. But because we as a nation can be proud of certain things, like when the boys in green do well, or when we win a grand slam in the rugby like we did this year, we can collectively pat ourselves on the back and give ourselves a big hug like we did in 2015 with marriage equality, and then definitely with my word of the year, fucking the blaena, Ashgar.
Indeed.
Ashgar is clearly the Irish word of 2018. Normally I'd run a poll, but I mean it would only be an academic exercise.
It has to be the end. I'm not going to cry doing this. I promise I won't cry. But it was an amazing year. And I quite hasten to use the word amazing, because it was pretty shit for a lot of it. And it's a pretty shit thing to have to do. Anyone who was involved in marriage equality, it says, to have to knock on doors and ask for your rights is pretty shit. Mm-hmm. But what Irish people did, and what Irish women did in particular, was amazing in terms of just entirely grassroots. I mean, it was just normal people who were never politically active before, who decided, I'm not taking this anymore. Not just in 2018. I mean, this movement has been coming for 35 years, realistically, but got going in the last five. And then this year was the year. I mean, it's weird now because I'm part of Lawyers for Choice and we're currently watching the legislation go through the Dáil and go through the Seanad. And while we have concerns about it, whatever, we have to keep reminding ourselves that, like, this time 12 months ago, like, we didn't even think that it was going to be a referendum, you know? And I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier about debates on radio and stuff and how people are done with debates. Because we had all of these awful debates and they were so, so harrowing that you had to sit and listen. I mean, I don't think I'll ever forget the feelings I felt when I watched Claiborne Live, the Claiborne Live show before. It was just the worst thing I've ever had to sit through. But people didn't care. People didn't care that there was a 50-50 on the debate. They were sick of it and people knew what they knew. And I remember my supervisor saying to me a couple of days before the vote that, like, generally Irish people are good people. They're going to do the right thing. They're going to do the loving thing. And that's what they did. And now I'm going to stop because I'm going to cry.
I remember shortly after that Claiborne debate going out canvassing, knocking on doors and asking people. And to be fair, like, while people are good and while people want to do the best thing, you ended up with weaselly tactics from one side. And that had to be undone on the doors, you know. So you're listening to people going, oh, but I heard this on the telly. What about this? What about this? Yeah. And you just sit down, you just palm open and you just go, look, that's not happening. It's not like that. That's not the way it is. But those personal connections and those thousands and thousands of volunteers who went around knocking on doors, like, you certainly hear lots about the big figures and how important they are. And don't get me wrong, like, the Tara Flynn, Shubhangi Karmakar, Steffi Lord, Sinead Redmond, Cathy Shields, Alva Smith, Deirdre Duffy. You could name women who just made a difference, in Anna Cosgrave, that, you know, that made a difference. But there were thousands and thousands more going out, knocking on doors, opening their hearts to people, putting themselves, you know, out there and at risk in some cases. I remember one time we had the dog set on us at one stage in Clondalkin by someone who was, they definitely made their mind up, shall we say. Yeah. But yeah, to be greeted with a population that was willing to talk and willing to listen and yeah, like this shitty, shitty radio debate, it was poisonous, it was damaging, it was upsetting. And at the end of the day, we were able to overcome it. And I'm really, really, really... It is very, very, very special memories for me because I did my last canvass on the day before the referendum. And on the day of the referendum, my wife went into the maternity hospital to be induced. And then the night the results came in, my son was born. So it was...
Oh, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, I think I'm getting a bit teary-eyed as well. But I'm still friends with the people I went out canvassing with in Dublin Midwest, and they still call him Baby Repeal.
Aww.
That's right.
What a world to be born into, though. Like the day, like what a way to come into the world, you know?
I think so. It's a great time. And you mentioned the weaselly words and scare tactics being kind of dragged into the debate by the other side. And this is something, I mean, we all have personal stories connecting us to this campaign. And something that obviously connected to myself was that a certain disability issue was dragged into this. And it was, and I wrote about my experience being a father of a little girl with Down syndrome, a wonderful, amazing, little girl with Down syndrome, and how I didn't want her to be used as a prop in a debate by people who didn't care about it. And I found after I wrote this article, I got some great feedback, but then I suddenly started seeing the first nasty reviews of my book.
Oh.
And while that wasn't great, and people did, but I did get one letter which was at the absolute highlight of my year. And I just think this is one of the most, hey, Patter, I won't be able to read it because I'm, makes me emotional, but I got this, and I think I just wanted to share it because I hope it will cheer you up.
Hi, Derek. I know this message might not be welcome because there have been circumstances before where I feel like I've overstepped the mark with people in relation to talking about Down syndrome. But nevertheless, I found myself writing to you anyway. The article that you wrote for the journal touched my heart and that of my parents, and more than you could ever imagine. I have a 27-year-old brother who also has that extra chromosome. He leads the most fulfilled life. At only 27, he has competed in the Special Olympics. He's a kayaker. He's acted. He starred in numerous plays. He has a girlfriend who also happens to have Down syndrome for the past 10 years. He can literally name every footballer in the Premier League. He's a diehard Mayo GA supporter and even speaks a little bit of Irish. In a lot of ways, he's achieved more in his life than my sister, my younger brother and I. I'm finding it very tough at the moment,
because I fully support the repeal campaign and I'm constantly having to answer questions in relation to abortion and Down syndrome. But your article articulated the sentiments held by my family and I, and with incredible grace. Since I read it yesterday, I have not been able to get it off my mind. Only going off my parents' sentiments and experiences, I know that when my brother was young, they held lots of fears over the life that he was going to lead. But please know, as I'm sure you already do, that your little girl is going to constantly surprise you and everyone around her as she grows and develops. And should you have more children, she's going to teach them some of the most invaluable life lessons on the true meaning of ability. Again, I'm very sorry if I've overstepped the mark in contacting you with such a personal message, but I just wanted you to know how thankful I am that someone had the ability to put into words what my family and I feel. Thank you, Paul. P.S. Also, big fan of the podcast. Excellent work there, mate.
So, I mean, it was just such a meaningful thing for me to receive that because I think it was a hard year, but. It was great to get through, and this is one of the reasons. Like last, there's lots of charities to appeal to for Christmas, but one of the things, because Down Syndrome Ireland had to asked to be kept out of the debate, charities live by the amount of coverage, and they constantly need attention to raise funds. And because they took a very honourable stand of staying out of the referendum, they limited the amount of exposure, their ability to raise funds. So. I would love if some of you considered making a donation to Down Syndrome Ireland this Christmas in all of that. Obviously, there's other charities too. I know you both have charities you'd like to give a shout out to before we wrap up for Christmas.
No, Homebug. No, I'm only kidding. big props to what Alone are doing with older people and what Focus Ireland are doing with the homelessness crisis and inner city helping homelessness. And, you know, one of the other things that we've seen this year, and one of the bad things, because there's no resolution to it at the end of the year, so we can pat ourselves on the back, all we want over the great work we did with Repeal, but there's 10,000 people without a home for Christmas. There's 4,000 children, and it hurts to say it. There's 4,000 children out there, and Santi's going to have to find them in emergency accommodation. So, whatever you can do to alleviate that, that's my Christmas wish.
Yeah, and obviously, those are great charities, so contribute if you can. But if anyone was interested, ASN Abortion Support Network is a charity in the UK which supports Irish women who have to travel for abortion. And unfortunately, even with this legislation that we're going to have, there still will be people travelling. ASN have been doing amazing work for decades. The people involved there have been just amazing. So please consider contributing there if you can.
Great stuff. Excellent. So that's what I just want to say. I want to thank everyone for all your support of this podcast this year. It's been a great thing to be involved in. I expect the Motherfucklore podcast will be going on hiatus, I expect, around March time, just because. Yes.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Because just with us.
Because we all hate each other and we're just taking a break. We're all going solo.
We all have lots of people are moving on with their lives in very interesting, exciting ways.
You are moving on with your lives without me? What?
And just we will be taking a little time to take stock, and we'll be coming back bigger and better and badder. Who knows? We will be taking some time to reevaluate.
Yeah, but we got like 3 months left or whatever. Let's just go out with a bang.
We do indeed. We're going to go out with a bang. But the important thing is just, that for this year, I've just had the privilege and honor to meet some fantastic people, to have them come on here and to get to communicate with you, our listener, every week. I do feel looking great.
Our listener.
One guy.
I'm speaking to the specific listener who's listening right now.
You know who you are.
We thank you for being our friend.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Nope.
No, too much booze on the table.
Leave the booze. We are who we are.
I was worried I was going to lose my cool and stand, you know, say stupid shite, but I think I did okay.
I don't believe you.
So just the regular stupid shite.
Just the regular stupid shite, you know?